anxious to step through the gate again, Major?
Yes, I am.
We all are.
Would you like us to bring back anything special?
No, thanks.
Groceries, new outfit, flatware?
No. Just yourselves in one piece, please. Dial it up. You're safe.
Welcome to the Jumping Puddles podcast. Be sure to listen to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and or YouTube. And follow us at Jumping Puddles Podcast on Tumblr and Instagram. And Jumping Pud Pod on Twitter. And if you want to support our podcast, please check out our Ko-fi. Hi, I'm Sam, and with me are my fellow co-hosts, Ash and Tor.
Hey!
Hi! And today we're watching the season 2 finale, Allies. The Lonesome Wraith ship heading towards Atlantis carries Michael and his faction. Upon arrival, they propose an alliance, hoping to use the retrovirus to transform their wraith enemies into their prey. But can they be trusted?
Dun, dun, dun!
Okay, no.
Season finale? What the fuck? We made it through 2 seasons?
We're here!
It does not feel like it. It does not feel like a finale. Whatsoever. No. Not to jump the shark and start talking about the episode, but weird. Does not feel like it's done with the season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the season has been kind of all over the place, so they just had to end it.
Just like, quick, let's get this over with. The gas leak season. So, lads, what do we feel? I think we kind of said how we felt already, but
if you compare it to, like, the season 1 finale, okay, but like, can you compare anything to the Siege? Because the Siege is just, like, massive. It's insane. It's so good. And I feel like, maybe this finale is kind of speaks, like, for the whole season. Because, like, I feel like both the mid-season two-parter and the finale are kind of forgotten. Or, like, not talked about a lot in general. Probably because they are overshadowed by season 1 and 3. And, I don't think it's a bad episode. I liked it. I just forget about it because it's like, okay, maybe that's not the best sign that it's a little bit forgettable. But I do like it. Like, we see a Wraith Queen and we see Michael. I completely forgot that Michael was in this episode. I remember the Queen. But otherwise, yeah, I didn't remember anything. And I have no clue how this arc ends. Like, it ends on a cliffhanger. I'm like, okay, I know they're gonna get out of this, but I have no idea how. So, what do I want to say? So yeah, I don't think it's a bad episode. It's just overshadowed and maybe not as much as a banger as, like, the Siege.
You know, not to be so mean to this little episode, but that's kind of just been the theme of this whole season, right? Let me just preface it by saying, not to be so mean. When you think about it, if you have to rank, right, the season, like, finales, I genuinely feel like this is probably in last place. Because I feel like, right, okay, you have season 3, not to skip ahead, not to spoil anything for people, like, I don't know. Do we spoil things? I don't know. But, you know, season 3.
We put it in the spoiler warning, like, very much in the beginning.
First episode, like, all these years ago. But yeah. Spoiler warning, I guess. Season 3 finale, Atlantis literally flies. Like, well, that's all I remember, though, about that. Episode 2. And then season 4 is, like, Taylor's kidnapped. I just remember, like, his broad concept. Mm-hmm. And season 5, obviously, Atlantis is stuck in San Francisco. You know, so, and then, like, obviously the Siege, right? And it's hard to follow up something like the Siege. But I low-key feel like, this is so fucking mean, did it try to follow up the Siege?
Okay, I have a little fun fact, like, jumping way ahead, but, like, from the DVD commentary, they said in the commentary that they kind of had a plan for, like, the first half of season 2, with, like, the whole, they wanted to wrap up the whole story with Ford and everything, but after that, they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
But here we are.
Tell, besties, you didn't have to tell us that, we could tell.
Yeah, So we were feeling that way for a reason. So it's true.
Absolutely.
They didn't have a cohesive sort of... Because I feel like season one is so self-contained in the sense that... just I know we'll probably talk about this in our bonusode, talking about the season as a whole. But just to the prequel, season one itself was so self-contained story, and like there were story beats being hit throughout the season. Like, of course, there was quote unquote filler moments where we just like explored a Pegasus planet and didn't have too big implications on the season as a whole and the story as a whole. But with season two, it just felt like, what are we working towards? We just found out last episode that the Wraith were coming. We didn't know that the whole season. We just knew it literally an episode ago. So there's nothing really...
tension, non-existent lead up.
Yeah. Nothing. Yeah. Yeah. So this season finale, for me, was, like, fun. Because we got to see a Wraith dynamics with the team. And everybody, again, on the team had, like, their different roles and their different jobs to do. Well, sort of. But... but it didn't feel like a big finale, like a send-off for what we were experiencing this season. Because we don't really have a story to send off. It was just a bunch of stuff happened.
I can't believe they admitted that. I'm happy they admitted that, because, like, yeah, we knew. But, like, wow. I guess, I don't know. Yeah, that is disappointing, though, I think. Because, I like what Tor was saying, season one was just so self-contained, and it just felt like it had a purpose, and, like, it was, like, well-executed, like, for the most part, right? Like, obviously, there were some episodes that were, like, eh. But, you know, they were leading towards something. And so it's so sad that they were like, yeah, you know that great thing we did in season one? They're like, fuck that. They're like, let's just forget about that. They were just like, let's just say whatever we want. Like, let's just wing it. Please don't wing your super good fantasy sci-fi shows, for the record, if anyone's listening. Don't wing it. Plan it. Please. Your audience will love you for it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess we can just jump right in, just like the episode jumps right in. They waste no time. They're just, from minute one, everyone's shitting their pants and, like, freaking out, appropriately so, rightly so. I just wanted to say, Taylor Beth Crumb! Taylor Beth Crumb! They look at each other for, like, 0.2 seconds.
Yes.
Like, that's enough for me.
Yep.
That is enough for me.
Yep. Yep. I have basically the same thing right now. I was like, starting with the tiniest bit of Taylor Beth. I know, we're literally scraping the bottom of a barrel right now, but honestly, what else can you do? They probably interacted some episodes ago, but yeah, they're back. They're still here.
I thought you were going to say, like, I wonder how many times they interacted this season. So I was holding up three fingers.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't remember what those three are, but I'm sure they've probably interacted at least three times.
Yeah, probably.
I love that they remember that they exist. Love the memory of their front. Mm. Love that.
Yeah.
Two sentences.
Yeah. Also, we got an Athosians mention. They are back in the city, and they're by now pretty much used to it, to, like, flying back and forth from the mainland to the city. And you know what else happens? We never see the Athosians at all in this episode.
I was literally going to say, I was like, oh my god, the Athosians are in this episode. Or, like, they were, I forgot about, you know, they were brought up. There's a mention.
Yep.
It kind of makes me wonder, like, how many times exactly, explicitly and implicitly in the show, the Athosians have been moved, like, from the mainland to the city, from the city to the mainland, from the city to some other planet, like the Alpha Site, back from the Alpha Site to the city, back to the planet. Like, how many times? Because Ronan mentioned it so sarcastically, so I feel like it's been a lot. It's a high number.
Yeah. I wonder if some of them have, like, the gene, so by now they just fly themselves back and forth. Mm-hmm. They have, like, half the jumper contingent is just for them to use to evacuate or whatever.
For sure. Because the Atlantis people are always bringing the drama. somehow, some way.
I was gonna say though, like, they're just so silly. Like, why even, like, I, you know, we went through this in season one. There's no need for them to, like, live on the mainland. Girl, you know how big Atlantis is? Just give them their own tower. Just be, like, next door neighbors. Like, you know, so they don't have to keep moving out every time, you know, the world is about to end, which is, like, every other week for Atlantis. Like, those poor people have to, like, move all their, like, livestock. They're think about the cows. Think about the chickens and their well-being. You know, let's just start. I feel like we should just hit up, like, one of these big topics. Like, you know, we can get the small things out of the way. This plan. this plan. This team. Oh my gosh. It's like watching a train, like, crash. Like, it's just, like, just slowly marching to their own death. And you're like, please. You're like, just make a left turn. And they're like, oh, you said right? And they just, like, swerve. And it's just, like, flames and everything. Like, they're idiots, Your Honor. Please do not leave them in charge of anything.
No.
We all have our head in our hands, if you're wondering.
They're being idiots as a team.
Yeah.
They all have two brain cells. And it's just so funny to me because they're so confident. They're like, oh my gosh, like, yeah, they're, you know, like, oh, Rodney can definitely do this. They're like, oh my god, she's giving us, like the Wraith schematics and all this stuff. Like, oh, okay, like, we can totally, like, when has anything ever worked out for them? Genuinely. I don't know why they're so confident in their abilities. Like,
like, at some point, they even asked Taylor and Ronan, like, oh, has something like this ever happened before? And they're both like, no, never. So, oh, so let's try this. This is something new. This is gonna be good because it's a Wraith and it's Michael or whatever they were thinking. But it's, yeah, it's so funny to me that, the whole episode, Elizabeth is very, very keen to hear, like, everyone's thoughts and, like, to get everyone's ideas in and, like, give everyone the chance to, like, voice their opinions. But still, they take, like, the worst route.
And it's so...
It's a team!
Yeah, that's the thing that really boggles my mind. It's that everybody is, like, however they are on board with the plan. Particularly, the one that really bothered me was Ronan. I was so surprised that Ronan was totally okay with this plan. He was like, yeah, let's work with the Wraith to make Wraith humans and kill more Wraith. And I just don't see Ronan, like, thinking about it that way. I feel like his morality is very black and white from what we've seen previously this season, and I, like, the way he was dealing with Elia. Yeah. Yes. So him being like, yeah, let's do this, I didn't buy it personally.
You make such a good point. I completely forgot about how standoffish, I guess, which is how, like, outright, like, not really violent, but, you know, like, outright, like, unhappy with the whole Elia thing, like, Ronan was. And then on top of that, like, we literally just had Michael. And, like, you know, he was already technically a human, like, technically transformed, and Ronan was still like, fuck off, don't touch Taylor, don't even speak to her, like, I will kill you myself. Even though he was technically a human at that point, which is something they bring up in this episode, which I love. But, yeah, I don't know, you're right, I didn't buy Ronan's just, like, total nonchalant. He's just totally, like, chill with it. And I think, especially someone who's been, like, chased by the Wraith for, like, years and years, which is, like, not put any trust in them at all. Like, regardless of any plan, he would just be like, no, this is a bad idea. And I kind of wish that he had been like, no, this is a bad idea. And then maybe, like, someone had talked him into it, and then he would have been like, okay, whatever, like, I'll just keep my mouth shut, or just, like, I'll be unhappy, but I'll go along with it. And then he could have been at the end, you know, like, I was right, you know, when him and Rodney are kidnapped. But, yeah. There's a lot of that, I feel like. There's a lot of weird, like, little character moments where I was like, 2 + 2 is not equaling 4 here?
Yeah. For me, it did kind of make sense. Okay, so I feel like there are two parts of the plan. Like, the one is, like, okay, we're going to be allies with the Wraith. And the other part is, like, the actual plan, which is the Wraith, like, Michael and his people, his faction, taking the retro virus and, like, turning other Wraith into humans to feed on them to, like, counter the food shortage, I guess. So I can see why it doesn't really make sense for Ronan to be, like, totally on board with, like, allying with the Wraith, but I can see him being okay with the Wraith using the retrovirus. Because of Michael and because of Elia, because he was always so adamantly against anything that has anything to do with Wraith, like Elia, who tried not to be a Wraith, but was, and Michael, who they turned into a Wraith. But Roland never saw him as not Wraith. So I think it totally makes sense that he's like, oh, they're Wraith killing Wraith. Why is that? Should that be a problem?
Yeah, that's true. And there, we do see him kind of struggling with working with Michael, like, as soon as Taylor leaves the room, he, like, puts a gun in his face. So, the temptation was definitely there, which, yeah, it was that was a good moment for Ronan. I liked that a lot.
He was such a bodyguard in this episode for, like, the whole team. And it was so cute.
I love a good bodyguard, AU.
I know.
You bring up that scene, though, because I was, like, cracking up. I was like, okay, yeah, like, obviously, like, Taylor and Michael have, like, you know, this really, like, well-documented beef, you know, right? Like, you know, they're each other's, like, enemies or whatever you want to say. But I was just cracking up because it's kind of like Ronan just kind of piggybacks on, like, everyone else's villains. Like, obviously, he hates the Wraith, and, like, those are, like, his, like, number one mortal enemies. But it's funny that he'll just, like, jump on, and again, like, Taylor, he's, like, you know, he comes back and is like, this class is shooting Michael in the head. And he's like, I hate you. And then with Kolya, too, I feel like Ronan hates Kolya as well. Just like anyone who just like basically is like against the team, he's like, I hate you as well. And I just think it's so funny. He just has like mini bosses. He doesn't have his own like big boss per se. He just like hates everyone equally. And he's like that one friend who'll always like back you up like in a bar fight or something. Like in a bar, you want Ronan to be there with you because he'll just lunge up with the bottle. Well, I guess what we can do is sort of, like, tackle each character's perspective if we want, as part of, like, the plan, I guess, because I guess we just did Ronan. So I kind of want to talk about Taylor.
Yeah.
well, I really like that scene of her and John, like, you know, that conversation where she's, like, after the meeting, she runs out and John's, like, trying to follow her and they have that, like, they're always fighting. That type of scene. And I really like, I think she made some really good points about her, like, you know, she was saying, like, hey, like, I was one who wasn't even happy about the Rush Virus thing, but I went along with it. And, you know, like, you can't convince me this is a good idea again. And John didn't really have, I feel like, any good comebacks to any of that. He was just kind of like, we have to try, or, like, we have to take out the right, you know, any way possible. And Taylor's just like, okay, whatever. But I like that we got a scene of her again expressing like her unwillingness to go along, really. I mean, she did go along with it, but you know, she's very unhappy about it. And she's been saying, you know, this isn't a good idea, and she's proven right every time. I just wish we got to see maybe more of her throughout the episode being like unhappy, maybe more of her like vocalizing like, hey, this is a bad idea. And especially when again Elizabeth asked like, oh, has any of this happened before, you know, and her and Ronan were just like, nope. And they just said nope, but then moved on. I was like, no. Yeah, like, you can say no, and then Taylor be like, yeah, this is a bad idea. Like, this just feels weird. So again, would love more involvement from her. But I guess we can take what we can get.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like that scene with John, which, by the way, was added later. It was in the original script. But then they cut it, but then they were, like, under time, and so they added parts of that scene again. And I'm very grateful for it, especially because the one thing she says where John is like, oh, yeah, but we convinced you with Michael that you wanted to do this. And she was like, no, you didn't, but I chose to trust you. I was like, oh, my God, this is such a good, like, in general, this is so, I don't know, I think it shows such a nuance of like, a character to like, but there's a difference between like being convinced and going along with something because like you choose to trust a person who is like running the whole thing. So I really, really love that. And yeah, I'm glad that she voiced her dismay of that, at least in that scene. But it was a bit weird that it was like so separate from like the whole group, that she only voiced it like in direct contact with only John and not, like, with the group.
Yeah, I agree. I think it would have been terrible if they cut that scene, because we would not have seen Taylor's perspective on this at all, really, besides her conversation with Michael, which doesn't really say too much about the situation. Just that she doesn't trust Michael, doesn't like Michael. But yeah, I think it's so hard with a character like Taylor in a group of characters like the group of characters that she's in. Because as a writer, I'm sure they wanted to express that she was not down with any of the stuff that they were doing, like in Michael and in this episode. But you don't want this character to become like an active hindrance to moving the plot forward, or to become quote unquote annoying to your audience who like want to see things moving forward. And so I feel like that scene was pretty artful in the way that it got across the point that she was like not cool with any of the stuff, but she was actively choosing to just go with it because she trusted everybody, rather than her at every turn being like, I don't agree with this, I don't agree with this, like in every scene. It was just more, I feel like it's more palatable for the audience, especially one that's so unforgiving to female voices, unfortunately. Because she's not wrong. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense, unfortunately. Like from a story writing perspective, that they wanted to move the plot along. And maybe if Hela would have voiced her disagreement with that, they might have had to, I mean, she has reasons why she doesn't trust the Wraith as a whole, and Michael in particular, because of what happened with Michael in the last episode. And I just remembered what I wanted to say earlier. It's kind of weird that she wasn't involved a little bit more, I feel like, and also that Michael wasn't more in this episode. They brought him in at the beginning, but I feel like he kind of disappears in throughout the episode, and so does, and I feel like this again, this is so telling for this season, because it happened kind of a lot. Like, they kind of lost like what they started with. They had like this whole thing with Michael being there in the beginning, but then they also have the Queen, and then the Queen kind of takes over, but also really, so it's kind of, it feels like the direction was missing a little bit. Like, it's a little bit aimless. It's a little bit all over the place again. Like, they have so many players in there, but they don't really know where to put them, maybe?
Yeah. No, that's a good point about Michael, too, because I was going to say, well, we all don't remember how this ends, I think. So I was going to say, I was like, is Michael in the next episode?
I think he is. I think they mentioned him in the audio commentary.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, I think the main reason why they didn't have more of Michael in this episode was because it wasn't Connor Trinneer, right?
Yeah. Then, yeah, maybe.
This is the episode where they use, like, another actor, and they just put the Michael face on him, and he just recorded the voice.
I didn't know this.
I didn't know that either.
Wait, really?
No.
Really?
Yeah.
I was like, looking at it, and I was like, his makeup looks so weird this episode. Like, it looked weird. Like, he looked a lot, like, greener. And, like, all these things. I literally wrote down. I was like, why does his makeup look weird? And then the next line, I was like, oh, wait. Yeah, that's not him. I was like, that's totally not him.
I think, like, I didn't notice throughout the episode. And then they mentioned it. I was like, okay. But I looked at him and I was like, he still looks a lot like Michael. Like, I think they did a really good job with the makeup and the prosthetics, like, to cover with that. And I think it helped that it was still Connor's voice.
Yeah, that definitely helped. But I do feel like that's probably what happened, is maybe they wanted him more in the episode, and then he couldn't be there, so maybe they just recorded, like, that little part of him and Taylor to sort of, like, wrap it up, and then maybe he's gonna show up in part two?
Connor will
show up? Okay, yeah, and then maybe we'll have more of, like, Michael in there. Because I forgot that, like, he went back. He's, like, with a Queen right now. Which is something I completely forgot about. And I know eventually they kick him out. So I'm wondering if that's in the next episode. And we get that whole arc where they're like, fuck you. I guess we'll find out, though.
Also, to go back to Taylor, I kind of love that she... I think I mentioned it already. I kind of love that she, like, is so distrustful of the Wraith. Because, like, I feel like a lot of times Taylor is represented as such a, like, calming and wholesome and, yes, badass character, but, like, always, like, there for peace and everything. But I kind of like that she has, like, this hatred, which is very valid. And but she doesn't bring it out as much as, for example, Ronan does. So I like that she has that a little bit here and shows that. And I was like, yes.
Yeah.
Give her like a mean speak or something.
Yeah. She has anger.
Yeah.
Very valid anger.
Yeah.
And it's just so fun to like watch her sort of like lose control occasionally. Because again, it's like not her character.
Yeah.
When she does it, it's like, oh my God, this is good. This is so good. And you feel like you understand her, I think. Because I think her backstory mm-hmm. is just so pathetic. And I feel like it fits in so well with like what sort of story Atlantis is trying to tell.
Yeah.
Moving on along, I want to talk about Carson.
Yeah, that was an interesting bit of this episode for sure.
Not like the switch up, not like the oh no, we can't, like now he's feeling guilty and like I don't know how to feel about that.
The thing about Carson, he was already working on it prior to this episode as a weapon, so I feel like you can't, there's no excuse of like, oh, the Wraith are going to disclose our location to the other Wraith if I don't work on this. Like, you were already developing this. And I don't know why, but I kind of took issue with the vocabulary he used when he was explaining to Elizabeth the reasons why he was doing experimenting with the gene therapy in the first place versus why he doesn't think it's such a good idea now. The fact that he said he was trying to free the Wraith from an unnatural state just sounded so like, you know, like just not okay. Like any sort of genocidal person, I feel like, would use that sort of vocabulary as an excuse to wipe out a certain type of people. So it's just like, ugh, it gave me like the ick. I'm gonna be honest about that. and so, yeah, I just wasn't great for me.
Yeah, I agree. I was gonna bring up that scene because it is a nice scene just to sort of like get, I guess, insight into both of how these characters are feeling about this, right? You know, we get the great Elizabeth line where she says, you know, like, well, I'm not really sleepy at night either, you know, like, she's just been taking, like, those pills, and you can, you know, lets you know that she's also struggling with these decisions, and, like, they aren't easy for her, but it's just so funny, because I feel like some of the things that Carson was saying was stuff, like, we had, like, you know, been debating and stuff in the last episode, or in, like, the episode of Michael, and being like, oh, well, it's not right, you know, because, I mean, once you turn them human, you know, once you turn the Wraith into human, they, yeah, then they're technically human, and then they were just gonna let the Wraith eat other humans. Like, that's just, it's a whole cycle, babes. Like, we're just going in circles. And so it was just kind of a mess. And I feel like there were just so many holes in all these plans and so many flaws. And I get that they were sort of like, you know, strong-armed, I guess, and forced into like participating because the Wraith was like, or we'll let everyone know that you're here, you know? So I guess they kind of technically had no choice, quote unquote. But yeah, I just didn't really love that. I feel like just the switch up, I think, is what was a little frustrating, because I just feel like they've been trying to show, like, Carson, like, being all, like, hesitant, you know, like, they've showed him, like, looking sad in some of these, like, episodes, but I don't know if I really, I don't know, maybe we're just, like, evil little rats who hate Carson, but I don't know. I don't know if we buy it, necessarily. I feel like I buy it from Taylor to be, like, you know, unhappy about, like, the way things are handled and stuff, but I just think we don't know Carson as much as a character, that it's really hard for us to get a good read on him and, like, what are his feelings, because we're just told, like, oh, he's, like, the happy, jolly doctor, but then, like, some of his actions are obviously not very jolly and not very happy, and so when they give us, like, this sort of scenario, and they're like, oh no, but he feels so bad about it. I'm like, but does he, though? Because I don't know if I believe you. So it's just things like that where, like, I get what they're going for, but it just doesn't connect, I think, with me personally. And especially because it's not like the Atlantis ever learned from this, right? That's the thing, too. Like, it's not like the team ever, like, grow from their mistakes. It's just they're continually, you know, they make the same ones every time. They will make the wrong choice. You give them two choices, they will make the wrong ones, you know, which is like fun, kind of. But I don't know, to like use these sort of arguments and then to turn around and, you know, like, we know they're going to end up making the retrovirus work or like some version of it, right? And it's going to be used, you know, Michael's going to use it to like turn people into like half monsters and stuff. So I don't know. I think it's a little, don't know if I buy it.
Yeah, and I don't know where I fall personally on the ethical dilemma standpoint, where, like, they were developing the retrovirus to make the Wraith human so that they wouldn't have to eat humans to live, which makes sense, but now you're using the retrovirus to make humans for the Wraith to kill, so they don't kill you. So, it's sort of like, not the nicest thing to be doing. I know they were originally Wraith, however, yeah. I don't know how I feel. I'm still thinking about how I feel about that whole thing, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not sure what I think about it as well, but what I realize is that this episode really exemplifies how little they thought this whole retrovirus thing through. Like, they didn't consider the ramifications of it at all. Like, they were just not thinking about it. Because they wanted to turn the Wraith human, but yeah, as you said, they are now obviously fine with Wraith eating ex-Wraith. For me, this kind of means, or what I take from that, is that they, like, for Carson, they were saving the Wraith, basically, by turning them human, which, no, this is terrible reasoning. Don't do that. You don't have the right to do that. But like, I think it's kind of a double standard they're using with the ex-Wraith, with the de-Wraithified humans. I don't think they ever saw the Wraith humans as human. And I don't think they were trying to put a conscious effort into trying to see them as real humans, because they knew what they'd been before, which was Wraith. And I think the only one who was true about, like, who was honest about that from the beginning was Ronan, because he never trusted Michael in the first place. He fucking hated him. He didn't even try to, he didn't want to play along. He didn't try to hide his disgust of him and his hatred. So I do appreciate that. And I think, again, back to what I said earlier, I think parts of Rowan's reasoning make sense in this episode, or of his actions. But yeah, I think all the others are just,
and I think,
honestly, just being dishonest.
Yeah, and I think what kills me about what Carson was saying about trying to free them or save them from the state that they were living in, like, let's be real. You were making the retrovirus purely selfishly so that you would not die. It had nothing to do with wanting to save the Wraith from themselves. Because they didn't want to change. They were happy the way they were living. You don't know that. Yeah. So it's that, I think, the hypocritical part of it really bothers me. This idea that you're trying to come off sounding like a hero, right? And then you're really, it's not the reason why you're doing what you're doing at all.
Yeah, and I think, not to tie this back in again, but I think it just goes to show just how inconsistent and how unplanned all of this season was. Because I think, like, it just feels like the team are just constantly flip-flopping between these ideas, and they don't know what they want. And I just feel like that's very, like, true, probably, of what was going on behind the scenes. Whereas they just had no idea where they wanted the story to go, and they had no idea, they didn't plan any of this out, they didn't really think about some of these character motivations really clearly. And so they were like, oh, but we should probably show, like, some of them feeling, like, guilty about this, you know, then they'd use these like silly arguments to be like, oh, but you know, Carson just wanted to change them. Well, Carson just wanted to free them. Like, ooh, you know, like it's these like very like silly arguments that just sound fucking ridiculous when you say them out loud, and sound kind of fucking insane when you say them out loud. You know, again, it just doesn't seem like any of this was planned properly, and I feel like that's why like this sort of like arc, I guess, just kind of falls flat. I think like with the retrovirus, everything to do with the retrovirus just always does not sit well with me. I think because it's just not well thought out. I think just like from a story perspective, from a character perspective, I think it fails in every way. And it just makes the characters look incompetent and like fucking, again, insane. Because it, like, you know, and I don't mind that our team sucks at things. Like, I don't. But I don't know. It's just like the reasoning they use and sort of the way they just keep sort of failing upwards, I guess. Like, if you're gonna have these, you know, our team be like fucking idiots, like give them a good consequence every once in a while, you know. Yeah. Show their repercussions. Don't show them like actually like quote unquote like winning this war through all these like terrible ideas and like half-baked plans that just like don't really seem to, that probably wouldn't work out in your favor, right? Yeah, so I hated that. I mean, I loved it, I guess, in a way, just getting insight into the characters, but I just hated, like, all of Carson's reasons. And I was like, this is so bad. And the fact is, the team's going to keep trying again and again, or they're going to try different ways and different ideas of how to do this. And it's like, yeah, they just never learn.
Yeah, actually, I was thinking, and Elia. Like, let's say that we can use Elia as, like, what Carson is talking about when he's trying to free the Wraith from their unnatural state or whatever. Like, see how that turned out? That didn't turn out good at all. That had the opposite effect of what you wanted. And yet you continue, like you just said, Sam, to experiment and to try to improve on it when it's just not a good idea to start with. So, yeah, not great.
I mean, to be fair, with Elia, the retrovirus was still very much in the beginning and, like, not unfinished yet, true. I guess. So, was it?
Is it? No, it is. But I was saying, like, is it still kind of in the beginning, though? Because, again, they failed with Michael. It didn't work with Michael.
Yeah.
Like, right. It's never really worked.
Yeah, no, it didn't. But they've been, like, they said they've been working on it for, like, 2 months or not, or, like, I don't know how long Michael was, how long ago. I feel like they say something about 2 months. I could be wrong, though. They've been working on it, on, like, perfecting it. And, like, we see it in this episode. No, we don't really see it. But they say that it works. But we don't see, like, any long-term thing because, like, one test subject they use dies instantly because the king kills him.
So we don't know the longevity of it, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. We just know, again, we're not any further than we were with Michael, I guess. It makes me feel a little bit queasy how they go about all this with the whole, going back and forth on their reasoning and justification, maybe, as well, for, like, their actions. And, yeah. It makes me, in retrospective, I think it makes me a bit mad at the team during Michael. Because, yeah, what I said before, that if they can switch so quickly on, like, the Wraith turned human, then there was something that I didn't believe in, like, from the start. That they're fully human. Yeah.
They just have no business being involved in this. If it's, like, not well thought out, if they have, like, no plans. Like, they are just running amok. Like, no restrictions. Like, this is what happens when you just can, you know, you're allowed to do whatever the fuck you want. You make the dumbest decisions. And I just feel like, yeah, they just have no business doing any of this. They really have, like, Carson, you're a fucking doctor. A medical doctor. Get your ass back in the, like, med lab. Like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, do not go concocting up this shit. Like, this is not for you.
No, I was surprised that he, like, I don't know how far our, like, doctor's, like, field goes, but I was surprised that he was working with the Wraith and Zelenka on, like, finding the right distribution system for the I think they put the virus in the gas, I guess, and they tried to like find a right distribution system so they could like hit a whole hive ship at once. And I was surprised that he was part of the team. I did enjoy it. I think I thought he and Zelenka were a very fun like combination. But yeah, go to medbay.
Yeah, it was
what
really
is his
funny.
Specialty?
Oh, genetics, wasn't it?
Well,
I think.
Oh,
that's why.
Is oh it? No!
I think.
Oh no! I'm not sure.
You made that up.
Oh, it would make sense.
Because like,
I mean,
how would he be so good at doing this? Like biological warfare affecting people's genes stuff.
Why is he doing surgery then? Like, why is he in charge of surgical stuff? Like, I thought you were gonna say, like, oh, like, he's a surgeon, or like, oh, you know, he was a general practitioner. Like, what the f- I, huh?
I think. I could be wrong.
No, that's so funny, though. He's just ambiguous doctor type. It's just so clear they did not have, they were like, yeah, doctors can do whatever they want. They're like, yeah, he can, you know, make a virus, and also have, you know, do complicated surgeries. Yeah, he's just that cool.
I mean, that's kind of on brand for Stargate, I feel like, because, like, do they specialize, really?
Although, yeah, you guys are right, though. I did enjoy the Zelenka Carson moments that we got, because those were really funny, and particularly when Carson kind of forgets himself and starts yelling at the Wraith, and it's not even focused on, but you can see Zelenka's face in the background, like, he's ready to pee his pants. Like, he's ready to see Carson die in front of him. Oh. In 2 seconds.
They were so funny how scared they were talking or like working with the Wraith. And I liked how every time in the beginning when a new Wraith was introduced in this episode, except Michael, they were kind of like this silent menace and just like sitting there and not talking or standing there and not talking for a while. I was like, this is cool. They're actually creepy right now. So I appreciate that. And then eventually they started talking. And yeah, that was the first scene with, I think it was the first scene with Carson and Zelenka just like trying, like being so uncomfortable and so scared and like making like really awkward jokes and the Wraith just standing there and like not having it at all. But yeah, it was really funny when he kind of lost it in quotation marks.
Zelenka himself, like the entire episode, I just found really charming. I loved him so much. I don't blame him for anything that happened in this episode. He was just along for the ride. He was just doing his work, you know? He was great. Like, I think there was a scene with John that made me laugh too, for multiple reasons.
I felt so bad for him.
So John comes in with this tray with like mugs on it, right? For the science team. I use in quotations. For, like, the hot scientists. Anyway, Zelenka should be included on that list. But anyway, so he comes to Zelenka's desk and he, like, Zelenka goes to reach for the mug and then John picks up and drinks from it and I was, like, devastated for Zelenka. Wow. Poor him. That was just so, it was wonderful. Excellent physical comedy. I don't know if that was in the script or they just riffed that, but either way, it's so good.
He's like, but he didn't even give, he didn't even look at the scientist when she grabbed her coffee. Like, he's such a fucking idiot. Like, you bring her coffee or whatever, and you don't even, like, make eye contact. It was like, she wasn't even there. Like, I just saw her grab a coffee and left, and he didn't even say anything or nothing was said. I was like, you're so bad at this, John. I was like, what the fuck?
I can't tell if it was on purpose or not. I really can't. But I love how Zelenka reacts to him, though. Like, he's annoyed, but he's also very fond. Of him. He's very fond of Shepard, which I think is really cute. Like, even when John makes a comment about the encyclopedia, like, he's, like, rolling his eyes, but he's also laughing. So, just, I think it's really, they're cute. I don't know. I never noticed them, their interactions before, but, that was sweet.
He fell into the charm of John
Shepard.
Yeah,
exactly.
You can't resist.
No, he, like, hates it. Mastery. But he also can't help but love the guy.
Darling,
yeah.
Sorry, you said can't help, and I went there.
No, it's kind of, I like Rodney and Zelenka, but I also like seeing Zelenka, like, on his own, or, like, being in charge or like working apart from Rodney, because like it shows such a completely different side, and I think I really enjoy that. I just like having him here. I was so happy when he popped up at the end of the beginning. I was like, oh my god, they brought Selenka back for the finale. So he's such a fun character. His reactions are always hilarious.
Yeah, we're actually Selenka's number one fan club on the Jumping Puddles podcast. We heart Selenka.
We do.
I was going to say he has so many moments with so many different people. Like, he had moments with John, moments with Carson, with Chuck in the beginning of the episode. And also Rodney, too, just not in person. Like, him asking about Rodney when Rodney was on the race ship was so cute. I love them.
Was adorable. He was genuinely, like, worried about him. But, of course, you can't show that when Rodney is around because he's a fucking asshole.
Yeah, exactly.
But it was really sweet. I think it showed the true nature of their relationship. Which only comes up when, like, one of them is dying or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, John, that's how all good relationships work, right?
Yeah. I like the emotional stuntedness.
Well, no, I was going to say, I love, yeah, no, that scene is so cute. Just John updating Rodney's work husband. Not the boyfriend and the work husband competing. Not competing, but, you know, letting each other know that their husband's going to be okay.
Very sweet.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about John's stupid fucking encyclopedia joke. Because, how much do you want to bet, though? Do we think he was looking up S for whatever? Or do you think it was for some stupid fucking nerd reason, and he just let Selenka think? What do we think, gang?
I don't know, because I feel like John seems like the type to be a very precocious child. Or preteen, or whatever you want to say. So I feel like he totally would do that. But on the other hand, I also think that he wasn't just reading the encyclopedia for that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
He wanted to be smart. Say,
I think it's both.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's both.
Absolutely.
And I love Zanga's response. He's like, no. He's like, right, sexuality or something? And he's like, no. And he, like, moves on really quick or something. It's so cute.
I kind of wish that was more of a running gag with John, to be honest with you, because there's always, like, the romancing alien women joke that Rodney brings up all the time, but I think it would have been funny if, like, John was sort of preoccupied with the Wraith in that way, like, because he makes a comment at the end of the episode or near the end of the episode where he's like, what's a girl like her do for fun, referring to the queen.
Yeah.
So I feel like he's genuinely curious. Like, I don't know. Something is strange there.
He's a monster fucker.
Yeah, I really think so.
He gets the boyfriend next season. We're gonna see him and Todd.
Yeah. There you go.
True. Oh yeah.
Don't they, like, do people make jokes about him? You can find out first, like,
hand. Sorry. Maybe not hand. Sorry. Fetch.
I was gonna say, but like, do people make like running jokes that like in the show that like Todd's obsessed with John, and like I feel like people make those jokes about like John and like Todd just like being like weird friends. Like, I know it's like a fic thing for sure, but I definitely remember like someone, like, I'm trying to remember who it was, but I feel like people make those jokes that like they're like weird friends.
You're probably right. I just don't recall right now. Probably Caldwell. I feel like Caldwell would shame him for that.
Kink shame. Not the kink shame.
I wonder if the Wraith kink shame Todd for being a human fucker.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Absolutely. They're like, human is food.
It's worse.
Do not sleep.
Yeah. It's worse because they eat them. Ew. Oh, God.
And Todd's like, no, but what if he saved me one time? And they're like, no, human is food. Eat food.
It's like a Little Mermaid, you know, like, but Daddy, I love him situation.
Yeah. Michael would understand him, though.
Yeah. Speaking of fucking Wraith, the Wraith Queen, smash or pass?
Smash. Instant smash. Are you kidding me? Smash. No, yeah. No thoughts. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, same. She was walking in like her white outfit. I was like, damn, Slay Queen! Smash.
Yeah. They wrote down, I was like, our first Wraith Queen who's not a fucking emo. Like, sound.
Yeah, I know.
She's not goth. She's not goth.
No.
She's wearing all white. Her salt and pepper hair. Are you kidding
me? Yeah. I know. Insane. Yeah. It was, yeah.
Like, she was still a dom, but she wasn't an emo dom.
Oh, yeah.
Or a goth one.
Definitely. Definitely. I kind of love that she was, like, wearing white, and it goes a little bit against, like, yeah, she was not, like, it set her apart from the other queens, but, or, like, from the Wraith in general, but also, kind of, like, rejecting the whole light is good and dark is bad theme, that is so prevalent in, like, media.
I was like, what if she did that on purpose? Right? I was like, what if she was, like, trying to appeal more to, like, the human sensibilities or whatever, or, like, trying to appear more like, what were the ancients like, or whatever the fuck, and so she just, like, chose all white. I could see.
Maybe. Or, it was, like, a cultural thing for, like, Wraith, because I don't know if you noticed, it's also something that came up in the audio commentary, the Wraith Queen was orange.
Mm-hmm.
All the other Wraith are green. She's orange.
She looks more human colored, like warm toned.
She does.
Yeah.
She does. Yeah.
Huh.
And someone mentioned, like, oh, maybe, like, Wraith can have different colors, which is kind of cute. Cute. Cool.
Yeah. Because wasn't, like, the first Wraith Queen back in the pilot, wasn't she, like, more blue?
Than green?
Right? With, like, the red wig, and she had more of, like, blue skin.
She wasn't a queen, she was a keeper, but yeah, that's true, she was more bluish, and all the Wraith we see, or like, most Wraith we see are kind of greenish.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, maybe it was a mix.
Interesting. Well, I like that, because I feel like, good on you, costuming department, and makeup department, because like you were saying, Ash, it kind of leads this, like, not only trying to appeal to the humans, but also ambiguous morality. Like, we're kind of playing with our morals. Like, who is the good guy and who is the bad guy? So, yeah, it makes that contrast, or lack of contrast, way more interesting. And Michael even mentions it in his conversation with Taela, being like, we all have instinct that's not the best, that we need to, like, fight in order to be considered, quote-unquote, civilized or human-like, right? So, yeah. Interesting. Very interesting.
Also, the Queen and Michael have gray hair, and I think the only Wraith we've seen so far had white hair, except the Keeper.
True,
with
true.
Pink hair. But yeah, there was also something new.
Well, nothing mentioned the white hair. I was actually kind of pissed. Not pissed the wrong way. I was just a little like, eh, I don't know if I love that choice. It's when they turn the Wraith human, and he has that long white hair. I was like, what the hell? I was like, they turned Michael human and he just had normal human hair.
Mm.
And I was like, I kind of hate that. Because I think, if I remember correctly, I think we eventually see more human Wraith and they all have long white hair. I was like, I kind of hate that, like, distinction. I kind of wish, I feel like maybe they did it, like, to show that they're still Wraith, you know, and to have, like, sort of that, like, difference. So you don't think it's, like, oh, just, like, a regular human, right? So you still associate, like, no, that's a Wraith. But I kind of hate that, because I think what made it so, you know, even more horrifying was that Michael just looked completely like us. And I feel like the long white hair is just unnatural, and it kind of takes away from that. And again, it's the show pushing into this, like, oh, but, like, they're technically not human, when it's, like, they kind of are.
True.
So I do hate that they started that in this episode. I saw that, and I was like, oh, God.
That's true.
I mean, it's kind of hard to, like, talk about, like, the remaining characters, I feel like. Because I was going to say, I was like, should we talk about Elizabeth? But in a weird way, she's not... She's in the episode. And she, you know, she does things. She says important things, which is great and stuff. But it almost just feels like, you know, besides that one conversation with Carson, where she says, like, you know, she's not really sleeping that well. I just don't know if there's a lot to really say on her.
I feel like she really, really didn't like the idea of working with the Wraith and trusting the Wraith. But I feel like she didn't see any other way out of it. So I think she was maybe acting out of basically self-preservation and like the preservation of her team, because like her biggest fear is probably the Wraith finding out that Atlantis still exists. So she was playing along, which was exactly playing along, like completely what the Wraith wanted. Like I felt like throughout the episode that she really, really didn't like this, like all of this, any of it. And that every time someone was like, oh yeah, let's do it, she was like, okay. Yeah, that's all I have on her.
Yeah, so I agree. I feel like she was kind of, like, always stuck between a rock and a hard place. Sort of this idea that at the beginning of the episode, we weren't sure if the Aurora-class ship, which they called the Orion, right? That's the new name, was going to be fully operational for this one ship that they were coming in, right? And so there's a lot of different factors you have to consider, like, if we are going to do battle with this ship, like, how fast are we going to kill it? Are we going to kill them at all? Are we going to cripple them enough and fast enough that they won't have time to send for reinforcements or tell other Wraith that we're here? So the option that she chose was, in a way, the safest option available to her, to ensure, like, the least casualty and the most sure outcome, I guess, for her people, not necessarily other people.
Yeah.
You know? Because I feel like that's kind of the center of morality and decision-making in Stargate Atlantis, where it's always about preserving us, our expedition, our people, and less about everybody else, as bad as that is, but as good as that is on a character standpoint.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I have anything really to add. I mean,
okay.
In a way, like, I kind of wish we got more of her feeling conflicted, but I also get that, like, just the way the episode was moving, you know, you can't always have those moments, so just the little one, I guess, we got with Carson was, like, enough. I'm excited, though, to see how, you know, this is resolved in part two, but to see if she has, like, more to do. We have no idea. We're the worst at, like, remembering episodes, I guess. I just I would love if there was some growth. There will not be growth. You know, I would love it if Elizabeth, especially with Elizabeth, I think the lack of growth just, like, always really frustrates me, especially when it comes to, like, you know, her love for the ancients and, like, her, I just feel like we just never know exactly, not where she stands, because we know where she stands, but I just wish we could have seen more of, like, her thought process to get to these, like, opinions or, like, these beliefs, you know? And that's something just, like, you know, with the whole team, but specifically with her, I just, like, again, we just, it's, like, kind of like Carson, like, we just don't get enough to really, I think, see her character and, like, understand, especially because, like, her and Carson, like, especially, do not have backstories, really. You know practically nothing about their prior lives. Like, at least with Taylor and Ron, you can make, like, educated guesses because of, like, their past trauma and, like, what they've experienced, right? But with Elizabeth and Carson, you're just like, well, even John and Rodney, to be honest, like, you kind of just have to, we know some things about their past life, maybe a little more from John as well, with, like, the whole war stuff, which we get in season 3, and, like, we find out more about his family season 4. So eventually we get more, and so I just wish they had sort of done that for all the characters. Maybe we could have understood their reasons a little better. But I will say, Elizabeth and John were cute. They were kind of very much like the running the city together. I liked the way they were sort of working together, and, like, John was making, like, little comments about, like, how nervous Elizabeth was in the beginning, or something. And then, excuse me, and then him sort of both of them, like, in Elizabeth's office, sort of, like, leading the conversation and interrogating the queen together, you know, and him making that little joke where he's like, well, I'm worried about my grandkids, and Elizabeth's just, like, looking up at him like, what the fuck? So, yeah, all of their little moments were very cute.
I especially loved when they're talking to the Wraith on the video call, and they're, like, their aerosol method hadn't worked or whatever, so they had to come up with a new one. And both John and Elizabeth, in unison, turned to look at Rodney, like, you have to fix it. It's so, oh, they're so good, this episode. Twins.
Leadership trio!
Yes!
Yeah.
Yeah, I cracked up at the I'm worried about my grandkids part, because John saying that and Elizabeth just looking at him like, are you fucking serious? You want to be a grandfather? You want to be a father? I don't know.
True.
Yeah. No, they were fun. They were really fun this episode.
Speaking of, I guess, let's jump into John. Because again, not really a lot. He was kind of just there, which is fine. Not complaining. We get a lot of John.
Yep.
You know, so that's fair that he's just sort of there. But he just kind of did John things. He was saying John things. And I was like, okay, that's John. That's him. Well, yeah, I guess that's it for John. There you go.
Yeah, not much to say about him. I guess in terms of his feelings about what they were doing, especially. It was just kind of, yeah, why not? Let's try.
Leader of the, well, why not club. Leader of the fuck it, let's go for it kind of vibe.
Yeah. I was just going to say, Rodney and John's joint PowerPoint presentation was giving me school flashbacks, but also was really funny. I enjoyed the hands on the hips, hidey-ho plan. That was very cute, I will say. But
yeah, we'll take any mixed chef crumbs all the time.
Yeah. What do you guys think Rodney's take was on all of this in the episode? We didn't see very much of his feelings about it. Too much.
I have yet to really understand where Rodney stands on any of this. Like, they did not exploit it in Michael, and they still are not exploiting it. I it's so weird, too. I think it's very uncharacteristic of Rodney as well, because I just feel like he would be the type to be like, well, let me tell you my feelings. Like, if he doesn't, you know, agree, he would say it. But then it also just doesn't feel like he's very, like, on board with it either. It just kind of feels like they just never bother to explain his, like, stance, I feel like. I guess he's okay with it. I guess in this one especially, he's fine with it because of all the information they're getting from the Wraith. You know, like, you know, all the, like, the usual, like, the jamming codes and all this stuff. So I guess he was, like, into it. We never get, like, insight into what he feels about the retrovirus aspect of it. It's more of just, like, him being like, ooh, new stuff I get to, you know, learn about. And it's like, okay, cool. Like, learning is fun, Rodney, but, like, what do you feel about, like, the murder of, like, billions? Like, what? Let me know.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like you're right, and he's so removed from the decision-making process when it comes to this stuff. Like, because it's not his science is not biological science, and so he's so not involved in that whole retrovirus situation until they need his help, like, with the distribution. And by that point, he has all, like, the fun tech to look at, like the Wraith ship and all that. So yeah, I guess for me, I interpret it in the way, like, as long as he gets a new science to do and, like, a new challenge, ethics are kind of like, meh, not really his concern, you know?
Yeah. Oh, God. Bye. That is the very in character. It's just funny that he'd just be like, yeah, fuck it. He's like, that's got nothing to do with me. I will say, though, as, you know, we have not gotten a lot of, like, Rodney in recent episodes, kind of. I mean, we had, a good amount in Inferno, but before that, it was kind of, like, weird. Kind of felt like he just, like, wasn't, like, giving his opinion enough, but I loved, and it, you know, it still kind of feels like he's not giving his opinion on, like, actual serious things. They've been using him more as, like, comedy relief, I think, which, you know, works. I don't, you know, hate it. because I love everything that he has with Hermione in this episode. I gotta say, man, again, give David Hewlett his 10s. He is acting the fuck out of a scene with a puppet. He is making banter work so well with a fucking puppet. It always feels like Hermione is a real character, like a real living thing when he's on screen, especially with David Hewlett, because the way they're like beefing and just like every single thing about it is perfect. I am so sad we never get more of Hermione and Ronnie because I just love them so much.
They are such a fun dynamic. I wrote down Snog Duo Extreme. It was just off the charts. Like, both Rodney and Hermione individually are, like, insane people to work with and, like, bitch around constantly. But then working together, holy shit, they don't stop. It gets worse. But it's extremely fun to watch. And yes, I'm sad that it wasn't more of a thing. Because I feel like they hate each other. They hate each other, but it's like a love-hate relationship. Like, I feel like they love working together, but they can't show that, obviously, because, like, Hermione is like, you're humans, and Rodney is like, I'm the smartest person everywhere. Yeah, no, fun. Very good. 10 out of 10.
Yeah, like, their level of sass is already high separately, but together, just exponentially greater. And I don't know, man. It's like two mean girls in the room together, alone. You know? It's great. Especially Hermione basically calling Rodney easy. Like, in the intellectual sense. Like, oh, you're so easily impressed. Which was hilarious to me. And, you know, we got Rodney in a t-shirt, which I enjoy as well. But another really funny Hermione moment in the episode was not just with Rodney, but with Caldwell. For some reason, this cut made me laugh so hard. So I think the Daedalus is being shot at or whatever, and Caldwell is basically yelling at Hermione to prepare the warheads. And it cuts to Hermione, and he's just, like, chilling. Straight up, no fucks given, so unbothered, moving so slow, while Caldwell's like shaking, and the camera's shaking on him, and he's yelling so loud. It was the funniest cut. The comedic timing was so good on that scene.
I'm crying.
I'm just imagining, like, they were on the same ship, right? But I'm kind of imagining, like, the bridge, and, like, being the bridge being shot at, and then it cuts to him, and it's just playing, like, elevator music, and he's...
That's how it felt. That's how it looked in my mind.
Perfect. Perfect, man. But I mean, besides, like, his funny scenes with Hermione, I don't know, I just, Rodney's just king of, like, relatability. I just feel like he was just giving it this episode. And, like, certain moments where he was, like, terrified, you were just like, yeah, I would be shitting my pants, too. Or, like, when he was sassy with Hermione, you were like, yeah, I'd talk shit to a little alien, too. Like, I don't know, I just loved how relatable he was. And my poor guy, give Rodney a break, 2024. Please stop stressing him out. When they captured him and they were like putting him in like a little pod or whatever, and he was like, I haven't slept in like 36 hours. And they were like, now you can sleep. And they shot him and he like passed out. I was like, this is not funny. I was like, but it's a little funny. I was like, cause Rodney like, please sleep. Like, he's so stressed all the time. Poor guy.
Why, when they captured them, why didn't they stun both of them? They just stunned Ronan twice. But, like, why did they keep... Wait, probably because they knew he wouldn't put up a fight, but still, they could have just sedated him, like, right there. But no, they didn't. They were like, no, we're gonna torture this guy a little bit longer.
So mean. So mean.
They probably like when he's scared, because he just gives, like... He's, like, actually terrified, and they're like, yeah, we're scary.
You should be scared.
Yeah, that type of vibe.
I was obsessed with Rodney and Ronan's whole vibe this episode. Wow. You know, I understand why people ship them now. I mean, I did before, mm-hmm. but I also really understand after this episode, because, ooh, I
damn.
I was like, oh, Okay, Ronan, go off.
Yes!
Like, when the Wraith was touching Rodney and he immediately was like, not today, bitch. I was like, yes!
Oh, because he, I wrote it down because I was like screaming about it too hard. He literally said, you don't touch him.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. Boyfriend. You don't touch him. We don't touch him. And we don't touch your boyfriend. We get it.
Yeah, absolutely. The overprotectiveness. So good.
AO3 tag, which AO3 existed at that point. So yeah, AO3 tag must have gone crazy after these episodes.
Absolutely.
Also, the whole, he's not my superior, and Rodney's like, well, certainly not in every sense. I'm like, okay.
Oh, like, in the bedroom, you mean?
Where's the fic? Also, since we're just on this topic, okay, the size difference. Jeff's kiss.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel is such a tiny little man when you look at him compared to Jace Armel. It's like a two-person difference. Like, oh, it's like a slope. Like an angled slope, the way it like just drops off. It cracking me up sometimes in these certain shots. I was like, oh my god. I'm like, girl, how you guys kiss? He needs like two boxes to step on.
He lifts him up.
Cute.
Yeah, they were adorable this episode. Even Rodney talking so much and then Ronan like being very fondly annoyed, like rolling his eyes, but also like not angrily. It was very cute. I love that dynamic so much. I am like, that's my favorite dynamic ever. Just bodyguard AU where I need it. Inject it into my veins right now. It needs to happen.
But I also wanted to mention, since we're on the topic of these sort of little ones, I loved that little Elizabeth and Ronan crumb we got earlier in the episode, where they're all in a circle and they're all talking about how they feel. And Elizabeth stops and she's like, well, what do you think, Ronan? Like, I want to know your opinion. And like, she refuses to go on until Ronan voices his thoughts because she wants to take his ideas and his like his stance into like her opinion. And she just wants to know so she can like make a decision. And I was just like, not only is that just like a good Elizabeth Ronan moment, it's also just like such a good Elizabeth moment because it just shows again like how like not just like a natural leader she is, just like a compassionate leader, and how like she wants to take everyone's opinions into like, you know, she wants to know so she can make her decision. And I just love that. And again, I just love the little Elizabeth and Ronan. Cute.
Especially Ronan, who was so touched by the Wraith in his life, for her to really like value his opinion and like want to hear what he has to say. Really nice. It was very nice.
Also, one last thing. I have to get this in there. I did love the Michael and Taylor scene. Because there's a lot of really delicious moments. One of the things I just really loved was that Michael was still trying to get Taylor to see, like, how betrayed he felt. Like, he was still trying to be like, look, I was literally in here. Like, you guys literally, like, tortured me. And Taylor being like, Taylor's just not buying into any of that shit. She was just like, I don't care. You know, when he kidnapped her, sort of, like, all, like, trust and everything just evaporated. But I love that. I love that Michael was still trying to get her to see his perspective, and she was just like, you don't understand, like, we're done. Like, this is just not a thing. And him finally being like, all right, goodbye. This is it. But it's not it. Dun, dun, dun.
That was intense.
Yeah. It's funny because I feel like this scene happened, I was like, oh, okay, I now see the crush.
Ha ha!
I see. From Michael's side, at least.
Yes.
Taylor's done. But, like, I definitely see it from Michael now. I'm like, okay, I get it. And then when he says, we will not meet again, I was like, oh, I wish.
if only.
Yeah. Well,
I actually really wanted to talk about the ending because I have a lot of thoughts, and I want to see what you guys think. The first one was, I had a thought, and I was like, maybe it's just because I don't know, what is it about the Deathless that I just really want to kill them off? But I was thinking, I was like, what if Because just watching this, right, again, we've already voiced our complaints. All of a sudden, this episode came out of nowhere. And I just felt, and maybe it's because I know how this ends, that I just feel like the finale wasn't as satisfying, right? The cliffhanger of the race being like, we're going to Earth now. I was like, no the fuck you guys aren't. I didn't even remember that was a cliffhanger. I was like, what the fuck? Like, they don't, why is Earth being brought up here? Like, it's not like they go to Earth next episode. Like, they literally don't even make it out of the Pegasus Galaxy. Like, why would you bring that into the equation if, like, they're not even going to show up anywhere near the Milky Way? So, that was one thing I was kind of upset about, that I was like, it kind of just felt like a cheap, like, red herring just to throw in and be like, oh, yeah, they're going to Earth. And then they don't step anywhere near it. It's just kind of disappointing, in my opinion. And so I was thinking, I was like, trying to brainstorm ways. I was like, what could we have done to, like, make this episode more interesting and to sort of give it a very, like, a proper finale cliffhanger? And I was like, what if they destroyed the Daedalus? Explosion. The Daedalus does not escape. Daedalus gets blown up. And it ends with the John missing, presumably KO'd, Ronan running stuck on a ship with no way to get to them. And Elizabeth and everyone just being like, what the fuck? Do we do now? Thoughts?
That's good. I'd hire you as a writer.
Yeah. I mean, they could do it because they have an Aurora-class ship. They have the Orion now. So,
oh my god, that's so true!
It's like, you're covered if you ever need a big warship again. You still got one. It's not the Daedalus.
Yeah, and it could be like, I mean, it would still function like the same way as the Daedalus does.
Right.
But again, it's like, again, severing that tie between Earth and Atlantis again. I mean, they can still come through, like, that's not a problem, but it's just, like, less of a presence and back, resetting it almost back to that, like, original, like, okay, we're alone in this galaxy, we have to, like, depend on each other to sort of get out of these situations. And I think it would have been fun to see, like, for example, like, maybe, like, Lorne takes over as sort of, like, commander of the Orion or something, who's, like, you know, that's, like, his new job, and so we see Lorne more, and, like, Lorne's the one coming to save the day and stuff. Maybe, like, Zelenka's on the ship as well occasionally, you know, and, like, Cadman and all the people are sort of relocated onto the Orion. And we get, like, these familiar faces instead of just the Daedalus coming up to pop, you know, or popping up and just, like, saving the day, quote-unquote. But, like, we have no ties or no feelings to these characters. And, again, it just feels like an extra cop-out, I think, because of how, like, tied to Earth they are. Like, it just kind of feels like, oh, Earth can come and save the day. But it would have been nicer if they were just, oof, gone. And then, I don't even remember if they have another ship at this point in SG-1. Because I think the Prometheus was already destroyed? ? So, maybe it could have, again, just, like, really, like, severed the tie. Maybe they can only come through the gate.
Yeah, that would be cool. Because of all the reasons you said. And it would really raise the stakes for Atlantis again, because the Aurora can't do everything that the Daedalus could do, like, mainly not going back to Earth like that, but also, I don't think they have beaming. Do they have beaming technology? I don't think they have, because it's a very Asgard thing. They mention it a lot, that, like, the Asgard have, like the Asgard beaming technology, so they wouldn't have that, which is, of course, extremely convenient, so that would have been cool. But would you, like, if the Daedalus would have been blown up, would that have killed Caldwell and Hermiod? Because I like both characters, and I like them in the show and the roles that they play. Like, Hermiod is, like, obviously, like, more comic relief, and Caldwell is more, like, to, like, I don't know, an opponent, like, an internal opponent or whatever, to Elizabeth, which is fun. So would you kill them off or save them somehow?
Ooh, that is a good question. I think I could go either way, I think. Which is probably not, like, the best answer. But, I mean, listen, it would suck. Like, killing off, like, Hermiod especially. I mean, Caldwell too, because he is, like, a presence. But I think it would add that it would definitely raise the stakes. Definitely, like, add the tension and stuff. And definitely make it feel like, oh my gosh, like, this is a real, like, finale type of moment. But I also just feel like, I can, you know, I see the arguments for sort of keeping them alive. And I think you could maybe keep them alive and maybe, like, having, like, a certain number of people on the Daedalus, like, escape. Or even, or what if they do this? What if they decided to use the Daedalus as sort of, like, a like a kamikaze run? What if they decide to use the Daedalus as sort of like its own bombs? They couldn't send the bombs into the Wraith. What if they decided just to get the Daedalus near the Wraith hive ships and then blow it up? But then something, and so none of them were on it. Maybe they were supposed to like remote control it, but again, something went wrong and it only took off and it only like injured the ships. It didn't even like fully break them up. And so the hive ships beam away, and then we have literally no way to go after the team because the Daedalus is gone and the Orion is like half functional. So everyone's still alive. You can have Caldwell maybe come. Maybe Caldwell takes over the Orion if he wants to sort of retain that sort of leadership role. But again, maybe they just don't go to Earth really ever because it just still doesn't have like, it's like been permanently damaged. Or Caldwell just goes back to the game. He comes in occasionally sort of like a, I don't want to say IOA, but I was thinking like an IOA kind of figure where he just comes to like make trouble and then dips kind of thing. To be fair, I think the reasons why I'm so like, eh, about like I don't really mind them killing off Caldwell and Hermione is because I just feel like they don't even show up as much after this season, right? I feel like they show up more in season two, which I actually like when they show kind of. But, you know, Caldwell brings a different energy to it, so it's nice. And obviously I love when Hermione shows up. Just don't always love when the Daedalus shows up. That's like the difference. But I do feel like Caldwell is like, I don't know, he just doesn't pop up that often anymore. And I don't think we really see Hermione either that very, you know, often. So if they had like sort of retained that level of like importance in the rest of the season, like season two, I'd feel like, okay, no, like they have to say like we can't kill them off. But because they sort of like drop off and like they only just pop up like once or twice a season in season four or like season five, I think they are still in season three a little more, but then they just sort of like disappear. I'm like, okay, whatever, like I could take it or leave it. But I just feel like this was their most important season, and after this, like, it just, I don't know how much they brought to the table after this. Yeah, and then let me end it on a positive note. Let me pray something. I was gonna say, I love the CGI of like the city and everything. Like the, yes, like the shots of like when the Wraith ships were coming down. I was like, okay. I was like, this is the prettiest like Atlantis has looked like in a while. I was like, this is gorgeous.
Yeah. They reused a few shots as well, but I'm never mad about that because they are so pretty and Atlantis is so pretty. And they added a few new ones as well, like the one, like not of Atlantis, but of the Orion. Like the first time when they mentioned, oh, we fixed the Orion, kind of, and it kind of zooms in, or like it goes over the ship and then zooms in on into like the bridge, I guess. That is such a cool shot. Oh my God. Love it. I guess that's where you can kind of see that it's like a finale because like they did have money for stuff like that.
That's true. The battle aspect was really fun. Like all of the CGI stuff was great.
Yes. Yes. The space battle.
I love the pew pew noises. Those are always great.
You can't have sci-fi without pew pew. I have a little bit of beef with the team this time. Because of the whole like Wraith human thing, but also like one thing that I thought was so fucking cruel was when they tried the virus again on this Wraith and he turned human and he was like screaming in agony, and I was like, why the fuck are you not sedating him? You're torturing him basically, and you're watching him. Why does he have to be awake for that?
Wow, that's so true.
Why?
I didn't even think of that.
They could have mentioned, so, oh, they can't sedate him because it will interfere with the virus, if they wanted to have an explanation. Or they were just like, oh, let's watch this poor Wraith human writhe in agony. Why not? And they were also uncomfortable. I was like, you could have made this easier for everyone. For everyone. But no. No.
It just goes to prove your point.
They're on timeout.
Yeah. But it just proves your point about them, like, never seeing the Wraith turned human as actual humans. Because, like, if they did, then they would be like, let's, like, euthanize the person instead of, like, torture the person. You know? You know? Crazy. The war crimes. They're stacking up.
They're on timeout.
Yeah.
They must, like, Michael and this episode is like, oh my God, they like did like 100. They like speed ran it. They like added like another 10 to their list. Like they had a checklist. They're just crossing off. They're like, oh, torture. All this stuff. Yeah, no, it was bad. But yeah, they're on timeout. For me personally, they've been on timeout since Michael. I was like, y'all are fucking weird. And then after this episode, I was like, all of y'all are in timeout prison. Like, you guys need to sort out your issues for me to love you again. Like, this is too much.
Also, the queen, I love her. I really do. I wish we would have seen, like, more of her, but again, this goes through, like, this episode being all over the place and, like, none of the villains really being fleshed out, I feel like. But one thing that I thought was so creepy that she was kind of... I was like, why are you making this feeding thing so sexual? This is really, really weird. She was, like, caressing his leg. I was like, this is creepy. You're so fucking creepy. Why are you doing that? Yes. I still like the queen.
What you're saying is, John and Todd fucked.
Yeah, probably.
Oh, case closed.
Yeah.
You I heard it man. Here first.
Don't play with your food.
You heard it here.
Oh, no. Oh, no. Damn.
But also, like, to maybe end it on a positive note. I love this what this episode does for, like, all the little ships. So, of course, I was happy for this tiny Taylor Beth Crumb in the beginning, but also for, like, Chuck and the Lenka, like, a little bit. I was like, yay, they're again together. And, yes, everything that you mentioned earlier with Rodney and Ronan, and Elizabeth and Ronan, and Elizabeth and John, and all that was really, really, really fun.
Even Chuck and Elizabeth when he's like, yes, ma'am.
Oh.
Like, yeah, that's right.
I love it when, like, I feel like, yeah, there are all these little minions, like, around, and then she, like, she's the queen.
Exactly. She has this army of, like... boys like Rodney, Chuck, Zelenka, Caldwell, John, like they're all like her little army. Her little squad of minions.
Her harem.
Yep.
Yeah. Perfect.
And on that lovely and very positive note, we head over to Ash for the Bechdel test, which...
I have good news.
No!
Which you paused this episode.
What? Since when?
Very, just about. But on two occasions, at least, just about. Yeah, but, yeah.
It counts.
Bare minimum. Literally.
Thank you.
I want reprises. Like, Bechdel test is two women who have a name talking to each other about something else than a man. So this is literally, like, the bare minimum for anything. And it is... brightening how many episodes of Atlantis, or in general, fail.
We'll be discussing in our finale episode, our Jumping Puddles finale, season 2 finale episode, coming out soon.
Our bonus episode.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We'll go in-depth and give you all the stats of how the season failed.
Yeah. But I just want to remind everyone, this is not like a thimble for how... but this is a feminist episode or anything. It's just, like, bare minimum. Literally. I don't know why I had to need to say this, but here we go.
Perfect. And we can just stay over with Ash for the behind-the-scenes stuff.
Yes. So, this episode is called Allies, or The Allied, in almost, like, in all languages, which is fun. It was written by Martin Garrow and directed by Andy Mikita. And it's funny because they have both worked on Atlantis for so long, but this is the first time they're actually working together on an episode as, like, writer and director. They were also doing the DVD commentary, so that was fun. As we mentioned earlier, Connor Trunier was unavailable to film this episode because he had just become a dad and wanted to stay with his wife and child. And the actor who was taking over the role of Michael was Brent State. However, we mentioned that as well, they still use Connor's voice to have, like, the continuity from episode and next episode, because they were already planning on bringing him back. Also, Brent State previously played Major Ferretti in SG-1 Children of the Gods and Within the Serpent's Grasp, and is best known for playing Rev Bem in Andromeda.
Another Andromeda deep cut.
I know. Another crossover. I love it.
Yes, we have some more recurring actors. Sherry Noel, who plays a lab assistant, previously played a physiotherapist in SG-1 Orpheus. And Andy Frizzle, who played the Wraith Queen, previously played the Wraith Keeper in Rising and another queen in The Lost Boys. So she's basically the James Lafosenos of Wraith women.
Nice! Slay!
Nice. I love her performances as Wraith Queens. I feel like, I don't know, they're so good. I feel like everyone feels so, like, distinct as well. They never feel like the same queen.
No.
She's great.
Yeah. No, I love her too. I was, when she walked on the set, I was like, is that the same? And then I remembered, and I also looked it up, and I was like, yes, it's the same actress. I love her. How could it be differently? Our friend James Lafosenos played the Wraith who was turned into human. It's his 13th and final appearance, sadly, as a Wraith on the show, and it's the first time that he performed without makeup. And apparently he was really hesitant to do it because it meant that he had to perform without a Wraith mask and he didn't really want to do it. But what the fuck?
He slayed.
We saw him. He slayed and we saw...
The house moves down.
Yeah. I'm kind of sad and I wonder what happened. I was... When I read that, I was like, what the fuck? That's James? That's our James? Our, like, multiple Wraith performer? But it was really sad to hear and read that it's last performance, because I think, same as Andy, he did such a great job with, like, performing all the Wraith and always giving them, like, a little personality. So yeah, I'm very sad to see him go.
Well, we really appreciate his performance and his dedication, to all the Wraith characters he played. And on one hand, like, if it was just because of, like, the makeup stuff, honestly, I get it. I feel like it would take, like, 7 or something hours, or, like, you know, like, just being in that makeup all day would just really suck. So I get it. But we're of course going to be sad. We're of course going to be mentioning him probably when we're like, oh, he would have been such a good Wraith here. And I'm excited to see what the other actors that come after him put into their performances. And I'm excited to see if they can deliver sort of the excellence that he did. I feel like those first two seasons of Wraith are just so iconic. That's something to be really proud of. And I'm happy with his face.
Yeah. I have one little goof, and it's Joe Flanagan, who forgot to put his seatbelt on during the F302 scene. But nobody noticed during filming, but apparently after, like, the 2 hours they were filming, he, like, got up and was like, oh, I forgot to put on my seatbelt. And we're like, well.
You know what? That just seems like a very John thing to do.
Absolutely.
Yep.
He's the type of kid who never, like, tied his shoelaces.
Took too much time.
Yep. That's it from me.
And now, we head on over to Tor for the Thicker Corner.
Alright! So, continuing our theme from last week, because this episode had a lot of Rodney and Ronan, and I'm exploring that side of AO3, so this week's rack is also gonna be a Rodney Ronan fic. It is called Kept by Ourselves in Silence and Apart by The Spike. I've recommended one of their fics before. It wasn't a Rodney Ronan fic, but their writing is great, so give this one a try too. Basically, it kind of follows the theme of this episode, Allies, where Rodney and Ronan are kind of on a mission by themselves, and they are each other's last line of defense. And so we have some protective Ronan and some protective Rodney, and it's very nice and cute and hurt comforty and good. So run and read it.
That sounds amazing. Also, if anyone out there has a Ronan Rodney bodyguard AU,
yes,
please let us know.
Please do.
We will take it.
Gladly. We need it in our lives.
Now we can head over to me for the polls.
So there's a total of 86 votes.
Nice.
So 24% said Stan, 24% said hater, and he's whatever was 52%.
Oh my gosh.
How low you screwed us. I thought the results were so much fun before
that. That is so funny. I am actually like really shocked. I had no idea.
Me neither.
That, like,
yeah.
52 is crazy. Wow. Oh. Well, you know, I'm actually kind of happy. I feel like it's the best of both worlds. He's not loved and he's not hated.
True.
Yeah.
And I can actually read you people's description of why they chose what they chose. Because some people commented on the poll as well.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead. Read some out.
So I had one person write, that shouldn't have happened to him at all. And it shouldn't have happened twice. And then another person said, I voted Anhi's whatever, but that doesn't really capture it. I love Michael as a character. I find him super interesting and well-written and tragic. And his relationship with Taylor is so interesting. I wouldn't call myself a stan, though. The multiple genocides he personally commits are pretty off-putting, obviously. But as a character, I do really enjoy how he's written.
I'm crying. I laugh at the way they put it was just so perfect. Like, he's a great character. Don't forgive the genocide, though. But I still like him, kind of. That was perfect. That was great. Well, thank you, everyone, for voting on our polls. Be sure to check out, we have polls on all of the apps, Instagram, Twitter, and Tumblr, if you want to vote. And you can also comment and let us know. We'll read out some of the funny comments or just some of your thoughts on the air as well. We're going to start that more consistently next season, though. Okay, we did get a comment on Spotify by AKHodges13, and they said, read the poll. I love Michael as a character, and I feel like he's so compelling and at times sympathetic, but we don't support genocide. And he goes way too far off the deep end to deserve stanning.
Love it. Love it.
I love that multiple people are just like, genocide is where I draw the line, which is good. But I'm just like cracking up at like, oh, that's amazing. Thank you so much. Again, you can also respond to us on Spotify. And you can also vote on polls on Spotify as well. Let me not forget about Spotify. Because Spotify is actually super important. Well, I think it's time. We've taken way too long at this ending segment. Really quick, let's go through and go through our ratings for this episode. Does anyone want to go first?
Kind of want to hear you with yours first.
Okay. I think I would... Okay, there's cool ideas. I do not think they're implemented well. I think it's just kind of been a problem throughout the whole season, though. Like, it's not just, like, a this episode thing. I feel like because it's been a whole season thing, it does kind of make me a little harsher than I normally would if it was just, like, a bad episode. And then plus the fact that it's a finale. And again, when they mention Earth at the end, it just feels like a... Like, we know that they're not going to go to Earth next episode, so it just feels like a really empty threat that just never really paid off until, you know, two more seasons in the future. There were some good moments. Obviously, there was some good humor. I do love anything with Zelenka. Instant 10 out of 10. But I think for me, I think I gotta go with 7. I think I gotta go with 7 because I think there was some good, there was some bad, and then I think a lot of it was meh. I think a lot of it was okay. I hope you guys don't, like, love that. Now I want to know what you guys think.
Yeah. So, piggybacking off what you said, Sam, I like this episode. I think the character moments are fun, and the small character interactions, like you said, really great, especially with characters that we don't see all that often, like Chuck, like Zelenka. It's nice to see them do things and get a chance to shine, especially in something like the finale. However, just in terms of comparing this finale to the season one finale, I can't say that they're on par at all, necessarily. I think that the season one finale did some really cool things, and they were trying to do cool things in this finale. But like I mentioned at the beginning of the episode, there was just no sort of lead up to this grandstand. It just kind of was mentioned literally in the penultimate episode of the season. So the cohesion of the story through the season didn't really lead up to this moment, in my opinion. So I'm also going to give it, I'm going to be a little nicer and say a 7.5.
That's actually perfect, because when I watched the episode, I was like, I enjoyed the episode, actually. I didn't, but probably because I think when I watch it on my own, I'm watching it much more superficially. Mm. So I was like, this is a fun episode. But now that we've talked about it, I realized a few things. And I think one of the main things is that, yes, it's a season, it's a finale. And for that, it feels a little bit too small. So yeah, that definitely docks a point. And it's a little bit like confused or like a lot going on, but at the same time, not that much. And it's like kind of hard to like see through like the plan of the episode, I feel like. Like there's, yeah, it's just a little bit lost, I think. But I think it's super funny. Like I think it has like a ton of comedic scenes or moments. I like the Wraith Queen. I like Elizabeth. We talked that she's not there. I just like that she's present, like in a lot of times. I like that. And yeah, so I think I'm gonna go and give it an 8 out of 10 because in the end, I still enjoyed watching the episode.
Yeah, nice median of our ratings. I love it. Very us.
Adam sounds like very perfect. Yeah. Summarizes this perfectly. Well, guys, we made it!
We did it! We're gonna watch season three! What?
Oh god. I'm not ready. Okay, cool. Fun.
A lot to look forward to. We've been doing
this for over 2 years.
Yeah. True.
Well, yay! I'm so happy we finished it for a number of reasons. but don't worry, we have some fun episodes coming up. We have a bonus episode coming out at some point. And we also have, well, we have a character bonus episode, and then we also have our bonus episode, which is a recap of sort of the second half of the season and just sort of our overall thoughts on the season as well. So I'll remind you on the air, and then we'll also post it on our social medias as well. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, ideas, anything, please let us know. You can email us at dumbingpuddlespod@gmail.com. I had a question that. And then you can also just DM us anywhere on Instagram, Twitter, or Tumblr, or leave a message somewhere. And we will read out all of the questions and answers and everything on the air for our bonus-sode, which should be coming soon-ish. But again, feel free to check out everything in the description box down below, as well as the fic rec that Tor mentioned, and all of our personal social. And thanks for hanging out with us today.
Bye!
Bye!
Alright, you clowns, listen up, and I don't often get a chance to say this, so savor it. Good work, boys and girls.
Let's go home.